True Events starts tomorrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Well, coming up, in the wake of the tax cuts passed by Congress, how are American workers doing? We're going to talk about that in a moment. Also, USF adjunct faculty members have voted to join a union, and the legislature has passed a 47-cent per pupil increase in education spending for the coming school year. That's after the governor promised to do much more for education. We'll talk with a local school board member in a few minutes. First, one listener comment about a listener comment we played at the top of yesterday's show.
Hi, this is Teresa. I have a comment for the guy that made a comment about the guy in the White House, how we should give, the media should be, you know, all these lies and everything. I just have a comment for him. For 8 years, we heard nothing but lies about President Obama, how he wasn't born here, how he was a Muslim, how he was going to destroy America, how he was going to, he was a Hitler, and he was going to try to get a third term. We heard language from Rush Limbaugh calling some girl a slut, Alex Jones, all the garbage that they spew. So I'm sorry if this conservative snowflake can't handle a little criticism of the guy in the White House, and when he does do something good, then let me know. But until he does, suck it up, you conservative snowflake.
Well, there you have a listener comment that came in after yesterday's program. Earlier this year, Congress passed and President Trump signed a bill lowering the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21%. Much was promised when the corporate tax rate was passed. CEOs in Congress and the president promised more investment in American companies, more domestic jobs, higher pay, and bonuses for workers. Conservative groups took out ads to try to stir up support for the corporate tax cuts. Here's one ad from the American Action Network.
As a working mom, I'm thrilled with the middle class tax cut. My paycheck is bigger every 2 weeks, and I'm one of the millions of Americans who got a bonus. The extra $1,000 was a big help. Now my bonus and bigger paycheck are giving my family peace of mind and making it easier to take care of what really matters, my family.
The middle class tax cut is helping working moms across America.
Thank Congressman Mast for cutting our taxes and tell him to keep fighting for middle class families.
Well, that's an ad in support of the tax cuts. Similar ads are running across the country. That ad ran on Florida's East Coast. We're joined now by Bob Lord, who's an attorney who practices in Arizona, and he co-wrote with Josh Hoxie an article for the American Prospect called One-Time Bonuses, Full-Time Con, Trump's Tax Cuts Deliver Worker Layoffs, and he joins us on the phone. Bob Lord, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the promises. Did I pretty much sum up the promises of the tax cuts pretty well?
I think so, Rob. It's almost farcical. It is farcical the way these tax cuts are being promoted with the $1,000 bonuses. The bonuses are really a more a PR campaign than they are a program to help workers. These $1,000 bonuses, the motivation of corporations to give them out seems to be more about 2018 election than it is helping their workers out.
Now, you quote in your article, Walmart CEO Doug McMillon, you say, "Today, we're building on investments we've been making in associates, in their wages and skills development. Tax reform gives us the opportunity to be more competitive globally and to accelerate plans for the U.S. What's going on at Walmart? How did they, what are they doing since the tax cuts were passed?
You know, I forget the exact number. We may have it in the article, Rob, but I think it's like 10,000 workers they've let go. And if you look more globally, from corporation to corporation, the dollars that are being used to buy back stock and to pay additional dividends absolutely dwarf the amount that is going to bonuses.
Now, that was the fear that some people had, is that the money wouldn't be invested in workers, that it would go to buy back company stock. I saw this morning a number that said that 41% of the tax cuts are going to buy back company stock. Any idea what's going to the workers, what's ending up in the hands of workers in terms of higher pay, like that ad suggested?
The latest thing that I saw is that there was something that the Americans for Tax Fairness put out, listing all of the Fortune 500 corporations and how much they've put into stock buybacks versus how much they put into bonuses. And I think it's more than 10-1 in favor of buybacks. And Rob, if you look at the way the tax law works, I'm not talking about this tax law. I'm talking about generally the way our tax system works. A company pays workers before it pays tax, but the dollars it uses to buy back stock are after tax dollars. So what this tax act did is it enhanced the amount that is available after tax. Well, logically, that's going to increase the amount that goes to buy back stock. What is it going to do for the amount that goes to workers? Well, when you're paying a worker, you're paying that out of what you have before tax. So the government is almost your partner in paying a worker. If the tax rate is 35% for a corporation, the government pays 35% of the cost of paying the worker. The tax rate's 21% as it now is. Government's paying only 21% of the cost of paying the worker. So logically, when you lower the tax rate, you're not increasing the incentive to pay worker bonuses and increase wages. If anything, you're decreasing it.
Are companies using last year's law to pay those bonuses and this year?
Mostly, yes, and that's the irony here, is that these announcements about how the new tax law is allowing us to pay our workers more, these companies largely are paying their bonuses under the old tax law. So, and it kind of makes logical sense for them to do it because they're getting a 35% tax benefit. Rob, if you look at some of the announcements, and I see this in the media as well, I think there's a misconception in the minds of many, many Americans that corporations pay their taxes first and then pay their workers out of what's left. And that just couldn't be more wrong. But I think a lot of people believe that's the way it works. And when you have people believing that, it's pretty easy to snowball them. To snooker them and make them think that this tax cut's going to leave more money around to pay workers.
So how does it actually work? Tell us what actually happens.
Well, if a corporation, say, has $1 million left after it paid all of the expenses of operating its plant or whatever, and it pays its employees $500,000, it pays tax on the remaining $500,000. It does not pay the tax first and then pay the employees out of what's left. So whatever the tax rate is, that corporation will have $1 million from which it can decide to pay its employees. And regardless of how much the tax rate is, it can pay the employees what it wants to pay them. So the compensation of workers is almost independent of the tax rate, because the taxes don't come into play until after the employees have been paid.
Well, we're talking with Bob Lord, who is an attorney, practices in Arizona, and he co-wrote a piece for American Prospect called One-Time Bonuses, Full-Time Con, Trump's Tax Cuts Deliver Worker Layoffs. Is everybody getting a $1,000 bonus? We saw where some companies, like Walmart and other companies were promising $1,000 bonuses. Are these across the board bonuses for every employee of those companies?
No. It looks like the $1,000 was some kind of target number that they wanted to use to promote the tax bill. But when you drill down, I think the New York Times about a month or so ago had a good piece on this. When you drill down, the bonuses are structured based on how long the employees have been there and other things, and the average bonus for workers is much less than $1,000.
In some cases, you have to be working at a company for 20 years before you get that full $1,000 bonus.
I think that's right. And that may be the extreme case, but a lot of these corporations are basing the bonuses on how long an employee has been there and on other things. And so, for example, like an employee that only, logs 28 hours a week or something like that might get a whole lot less or get nothing.
Any idea how they came up with this $1,000? Because every company that has announced these, the phone companies have said $1,000, Walmart has said $1,000. How did they arrive at $1,000?
I don't know, Rob, but I know two things. $1,000 sure sounds like a nice number if you're trying to promote how good this tax bill is. And it's quite a coincidence that all these corporations are choosing $1,000 as the number to bonus their employees. It almost seems like there was planning by the Chamber of Commerce, by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or some other body like that, that everybody, all these corporations would go out and give out $1,000 bonuses.
One question I had is, who pays the FICA tax? Who pays the Social Security tax on the bonus? Do the corporations pay the FICA tax or the Social Security tax, or do the workers pay that tax? And also, who pays if they're propelled into a higher income level? Who pays the higher income tax? Does the company pay it, or is that deducted from the $1,000 that the workers get?
The bonus works just like any other compensation. So the FICA tax would be split. The employer would pay FICA tax, and the employee would pay FICA tax. But the bonus would be, those bonuses that were paid at the end of 2017 would increase the employee's income in 2017, so it would go in at the top rate. But what a lot of these corporations did, Rob, is they declared the bonus in 2017, but the bonus actually isn't going to be paid until 2018. So we'll in sometime before March 15th, actually today, and what happens then is, corporation gets the deduction in 2017, but the employee has the income in 2018.
And why is that? Why do they get to claim it on last year's taxes, but not have to hand it out until this year?
Well, the way the tax law works for a large corporation is they get their deductions and they have income when their obligation to, in the case of compensation, to pay the compensation becomes fixed. So once they declare in 2017 that they're going to pay these bonuses, then they become deductible. And as long as the bonuses actually are going to be paid within the first 75 days of the year.
So it kind of speeds up the benefit to the company by taking it a year early.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So now I think the American public isn't really sold on this tax plan. I noticed that during the just completed congressional campaign in Southwest Pennsylvania, that they tried these ads touting the tax cut plan and the perceived bonuses for the first few weeks of the campaign, and then they found out that those ads weren't working. So the last few weeks of the campaign, they essentially stopped, the Republicans essentially stopped touting the tax cut plan as a way to convince voters in Southwest Pennsylvania to vote for the Republican.
Rob, I hope people see through this. I hope people recognize what an absolute charade it is.
We're talking with Bob Lord, who co-wrote a piece for the American Prospect called "One-Time Bonuses, Full-Time Con: Trump's Tax Cut Delivers Workers Layoffs." You point out in your story that poll after poll last year showed that the majority of the public saw no reason to give a massive tax break to the wealthiest individuals and most profitable corporations. And somebody at the Institute for Policy Studies found that large profitable companies that already paid an effective 20% tax rate or less after loopholes actually cut jobs compared to the rest of the private sector. You know, I'm looking at the stories today about Toys R Us. Toys R Us, one of the biggest chains in the country, today just announced it's bankrupt and it's closing. So the tax cuts didn't really help Toys R Us.
Well, you know, Rob, it's a funny thing about going bankrupt. If you're losing money before tax, you're also losing money after tax. The tax law can't help you if you're going bankrupt.
All right. So in the interim, since this tax cut was passed, there have been a lot of other layoffs around the country from other giant companies. I mean, Walmart announced, as you mentioned a moment ago, 10,000 people are being laid off. They also closed a number of Sam's Clubs. One of the Sam's Clubs that they're closing is right here in this area. But there's other companies that are laying off or still moving jobs out of the country even after the tax cuts.
Well, you know, the tax law generally is not going to influence the behavior of a corporation. Corporations out there to maximize its profit, and it's going to do what it can do to maximize that profit, regardless of the tax rate. For example, if I'm the CEO of a corporation, and I know that if I hire you and pay you $50,000, but you're going to increase the revenue of the corporation by $100,000, that's an extra $50,000 of profit. I'm going to hire you regardless of the tax rate, because regardless of what the corporation pays in tax on that $50,000 of profit, there's still going to be something left. So it doesn't matter whether the corporate tax rate is 21% or 35%. I'm going to hire you because the profit of the corporation is going to be increased either way. And so this idea, this notion that the tax rate is going to cause this dramatic change, it's just not going to happen.
There's an interesting point in your article in which you talk about the owner of Mount Air Corporation, Ronald Cameron, who sent a letter to employees thanking Jesus Christ for the company's great year in 2017. And then told employees how encouraged he was that President Trump and the Republican Congress had reduced taxes for businesses. Because of the tax reduction, Cameron said he was pleased to announce a one-time bonus for hourly employees. That sounded pretty good. But then you point out in your article that in 2016, he had a lot of money to be able to give to Republican causes, that his company made giant donations. Mount Air or Cameron made giant donations to the Republican cause.
Mount Air and this guy Ronald Cameron, it's fascinating. He I think it was he contributed $14 million in 2016 to Republican candidates, and then touted these bonuses that weren't even going out to all 6,000 of the employees. So it was something less than $6 million. I actually wrote another piece just last week about Mount Air, Rob, and It's a privately held corporation, so you can't get exact data. But from what I could tell, this corporation that has 6,000 employees, if you total up what all the employees get paid in a year and the amount of profits that are left over for Cameron, the owner and CEO, it's roughly a 50-50 split. The 6,000 employees together get about $200 million, and he appears to get about $200 million.
And you point out in your article that the workers there are paid on average $9.43 to $13.52 an hour. They're not getting rich working for Mount Air. What kind of company is Mount Air?
It's a poultry processing company.
$13.52 an hour, the top rate. All right, so would you expect these bonuses to continue next year? I mean, there was a splash, and a lot of workers are reporting some bonuses, you know, maybe $1,000 or maybe $200. But, you know, there's a few workers who are getting bonuses. Would you expect these bonuses to continue next year?
Most of the announcements, they do say one time. And for many, many of these corporations, the one time happened to be the one time that they could still declare the bonus and get a 35% participation by the government, as opposed to the new 21%.
So they like the old tax,
right?
When it comes to bonuses, the corporations like the old tax law. This new tax law, are you saying it may be a disincentive to give bonuses next year?
There won't be as large an incentive, absolutely, Rob. Although there's a little bit of a twist here, in that corporations don't necessarily have to file their taxes on a calendar year. Like, for example, Walmart and Home Depot and Lowe's were three of the corporations we mentioned. They actually filed their taxes on a January 31st year, so they could declare the bonus anytime up to January 31st and get the deduction. And it wouldn't be quite at the 35% rate. I think it would be at like a 33% rate or something like that. So there's this sort of phase-in of the new tax law for corporations that have a tax year other than the calendar year. So we might see some declarations of bonuses, say, at the end of April by corporations that have a tax year that ends in April. However, most corporations do have a calendar year, so the announcements, I think, are going to taper off as the year goes on.
And what about actual wage increases? I mean, who's looking at that? Did you look at that in your article? Are we seeing wage increases substantial across the board, places like Walmart and Home Depot and Lowe's and some of these big chains? Are there going to be wage increases for workers?
We didn't really look at that in the article, Rob. My own take on that is the tax law won't impact the wage increases one way or the other. The bonuses are to some extent a substitution for a wage increase, because a corporation would rather pay a bonus than permanently increase somebody's wage. We may see wage increases simply because the job market is tightening, and in a tightening job market, corporations have to pay more.
Well, Bob Lord, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF and talking about your article, which is one-time bonuses, full-time con, Trump's tax cuts deliver worker layoffs. And in the latest news about Toys R Us, I mean, it's in Claire's last week, which is also a big chain at a lot of malls. I mean, there's all this news about layoffs. I'm just shocked that we're supposed to see these companies reinvest in workers and not lay people off.
Well, look, a lot of these failures are in retailing, and you know, look what's happening with Amazon. Jeff Bezos is now worth, I think, $115 or $120 billion. As Amazon sells more and more, and Bezos gets wealthier and wealthier, these brick-and-mortar retailers are going to fail.
Well, Bob Lord, thanks a lot, and we'll post a link to your article on our website. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
All right, great to have you here.
Bye.
Well, you're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa. In a moment, we're going to talk about the union vote by adjunct faculty members at USF. earlier this week, the votes were counted, and out of 900 eligible adjunct faculty members at USF, 91 voted no for union representation, and 326 voted yes for union representation. We're joined now by Mike Russo, who was part of the organizing drive at USF among the adjunct faculty members. Mike, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for having me on.
So were you surprised at the overwhelming vote in favor of a union?
No, not at all. I was always cautiously optimistic that that we would win the election. And that was because every time I spoke with one of my colleagues about the union effort, I never had to give them a sales pitch. I never had to convince them that this was a worthwhile cause. They would interrupt me and say, is there something I can sign? Is there something I can do? And even full-time faculty would say to me, you know, by the way, get this union. You guys need it. So there was a atmosphere on campus that understood that there's a problem, and unionization was one of the ways to solve it.
Does this cover all the campuses? Does it cover Tampa and then USF, St. Pete, USF, Manatee, Sarasota?
Yes, all three campuses are covered.
So describe for folks who don't know, what is an adjunct faculty member, and how important is your profession to delivering education to students?
So adjunct is university speak for part-time, no benefit. And adjunct faculty in the 70s made up about 10% of the overall faculty. And they were largely people who had careers in the private sector and taught one class at night as a hobby or as a way of recruiting new talent to their businesses. And over the past couple of decades, especially in the most recent decade, the number of adjunct faculty on campuses across the country has increased, so that on average now across the country, 50% of the faculty at the university are adjuncts. And so there's been an effort, I think, on the part of the administrators everywhere to cut costs and save money, and they thought that they could hire a bunch of temporary workers and not give them any benefits and still have them teach a full load of classes.
So if I'm an incoming student at USF, how likely is it that part of my course load will be taught by adjuncts?
Oh, it's a 100% guarantee, especially in your first 2 years as a freshman and a sophomore, that most of your instructors are going to be either graduate students or adjunct faculty.
So what are the working conditions? Like you said, low pay and no benefits. So how much does an adjunct faculty member make, and how much work do they do?
Well, an adjunct faculty member does all of the work that another professor does, except for research. And so, you know, USF is a research institution. A tenure track or tenured faculty member teaches part-time and does research full-time. An adjunct is a full-time teacher. We don't do research. We just teach. And so we have a larger teaching load if those classes are available. So last semester I taught four classes, which is by any normal measure at a non-research institution, a full load.
So that would be considered like a 40-hour work week if you were a tenured professor.
Yes. Well, it'd be, realistically, more than 40 hours a week because of grading and class prep and lesson planning. It ends up being closer to 50 or 60 hours a week if you're teaching four classes and you don't have a TA.
All right. So I don't want to get too personal, but, I'm wondering how close to the poverty line do adjunct faculty members live if they're teaching four courses a semester?
The amount of money, adjuncts are paid per class, and it varies by department, but the average pay per class is $3,000. And so a full load of four classes a semester brings your yearly take-home pay before taxes at $24,000, which is, my understanding is that is the poverty line, the federal poverty line.
Mm. So the adjunct faculty members overwhelmingly at USF at all three campuses have voted to have union representation. What's the next step?
The next step is to sit down at the bargaining table and negotiate a contract with the administration, and that could take months. The adjuncts at HCC and community colleges, by the way, are almost entirely staffed by adjuncts now. But their adjuncts have been at the negotiating table with their administration for 8 or 9 months and have had a very difficult time getting any concessions whatsoever. And so it's going to be a tough fight to win dignity and respect and basic intellectual and academic freedoms. But that's the next step.
And you've got a union. You actually chose a union that's going to represent you?
Yes. The union, is not an outside group that comes in and then does stuff for us. The union is all of us adjuncts working together. And so it's going to be adjuncts at the negotiating table. And we're going to be determining what we're asking for. And ultimately, it's our decision whether we accept the contract or not.
Is it common for adjunct faculty members to vote to be a part of a union?
Yeah, there's a wave of unionization taking place across the country. As the number of faculty or full-time faculty decrease and adjuncts have increased, there's been a response, which is to unionize and demand better pay, more stability, benefits, etc. And so we are the first university in Florida to unionize, but we won't be the last for sure. And across the country, adjuncts are forming unions. Seemingly, there's a story in the Chronicle of Higher Education, every month about another school where there's an effort to unionize. And so far, everyone has been successful, as far as I know.
Well, we're talking about the vote by adjunct faculty members at USF, 326-91 to vote for union representation. Those votes were counted earlier this week. And our guest is Mike Russo, who is an adjunct faculty member at USF. Mike, you're in Tampa?
Yeah.
What's your subject? What do you teach?
I teach freshman composition. It's a class that all incoming freshmen are required to take,
which is really key to future success in college. If you can't write, it's going to be very hard to get through college.
Absolutely. And it's not just writing. It's also understanding academic discourse and how academics work in the sense of publishing their research in academic journals, having those articles subject to peer review, what that peer review means, why it's important, and being able to understand the different parts of an academic article and how they work together, and then use that information in your own writing to form an argument.
Mike, one last question. I'm sure as these negotiations begin, USF will say, well, we don't have the money. And we know that it's a struggle, I think, for all levels of education to get money out of Tallahassee. If they come back at you and say, look, we really can't afford to give you much of an increase, or, what arguments will you make saying that adjunct faculty members who you point out are very low paid right now, that USF can afford to give you a pay increase so you're not living near the poverty line?
Well, that is an expected argument that they're going to make, that they don't have the money. But what we've seen across the country over the past 20 years is that spending on instruction has gone down while spending on non-instructional things has gone up. So, for example, there's a building boom at most universities and colleges around the country. New dorms, renovations of existing buildings, luxury amenities. So, for example, at the University of Central Florida, they have a lazy river, like the same kind of lazy river at Adventure Island.
You mean like at a hotel complex where they have like a lagoon you paddle down? Or
yes, like a sandal.
And I'm sure that there's an academic reason for that.
Well, they call it Recovery Cove, and it's for their athletes.
Okay.
So I guess after playing a game, they can float down the lazy river. And LSU has famously a lazy river that spells out LSU, you know, in their font. And so these are the kinds of priorities that universities have. And at USF, there's a plan to build a football stadium, even though our football team already plays at a NFL stadium, the Raymond James Stadium. And they are renovating building new, you know, high-end, fancy dorms. So they have the money, but their priorities are all wrong. And there was an article in The Atlantic last October about this building boom on college campuses. And in order to fund this building boom, colleges are taking out an enormous amount of debt. And so it's not just students who are going into debt in order to get a college education. The universities themselves are going into debt. And at the average state public university, $750 out of every student's tuition goes to paying just the interest on those loans. Not even the principal, just the interest. And 9% of a university's budget, on average, goes to servicing debt. And so, you know, the university needs to think about its mission and its purpose and realize that, you know, building luxury amenities is not how you run a school. Attracting and keeping teachers and then has attracting top students is how you run a school. So that's the argument I'm going to make to them at the negotiating table.
Well, Mike Russo, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF and explaining the working conditions of adjunct faculty members who are so important to the education of university students at USF. Mike, thanks for coming on WMNF. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I just wanted to thank you for having me on. It was a real pleasure.
All right, Mike Russo, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on WMNF.
Thank you, Rob.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Great to hear from you. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're going to open up the phone lines, take your phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can also send an email into the studio, as several people have already done. Here's the address. Send it to dj@wmnf.org. Now, James is in Tampa, and regarding the first guest today, he said it seems $1,000 was chosen for the bonus number because it's the lowest account one could pay and be able to say 1,000, whereas anything less gets announced as hundreds. That's James. Who says that's the reason they picked 1,000. All right, James, thanks a lot. That may be right. Terry writes this, monthly income from the Florida retirement system and Social Security, I haven't seen any difference yet in the amount. So I guess Terry's living on the Florida retirement system and Social Security. He says, I haven't seen any difference yet in the amount of my check. Were we supposed to? Also, I bet Social Security and Medicaid will be cut. That's Terry's email out there. I don't think that the Florida retirement system was supposed to give a bonus related to the tax cut, although I don't know. And maybe if you're an accountant out there who's not busy filling out taxes, you can call in at 813-239-9663. We've got some emails. Not quite sure what some of these emails are saying, but John in Port Richey says, I thought one of the purposes of the tax cut was to give incentives to companies by letting them write off their expenses before paying their taxes. For example, capital investment into expanding the business, giving employees a raise, paying for health insurance. Not sure if health insurance is deducted as an expense. So would lowering the tax rate reduce incentives for companies? I think that was part of what my guest Bob Lord suggested, that next year there won't be as much incentive to do those kind of expenditures, especially the bonuses. All right, let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. James Lyles is our phone producer today. And let's see who's been holding for a while. We're going to go to Frank in Sarasota. Hey, Frank, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
Yes, my wife was a teacher at Argosy University, and what I really objected to, because she was an adjunct, is that she was tasked with curriculum development before she even taught the course. So many months and hours of labor went into creating the course that she's going to teach that's completely uncompensated. So I have no problem with her not working there because the compensation is ridiculous.
So
it's true across all these for-profit colleges.
Yeah, Argosy is a for-profit college. So she had to do the curriculum development before she even got paid.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, doesn't sound fair.
No, it's crazy.
All right. Frank, thanks a lot. Thanks.
And
I think private colleges are a whole nother subject that we could spend some time on. Here's our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on M&F. What would you like
to say? Good morning, Rob. I turned in late and got the tag end of your interview with regard to taxes and legislatures and all of that. Let me tell you what I am getting quite disturbed about now. I occasionally watch Channel 3, the Capitol Update business. I happen to have it on Saturday the 10th when the legislature was discussing their budget and putting it all together and blah, 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 getting ready to pass it on Sunday and telling themselves how wonderful it was that they're working on the weekends. One of the statements that was made, and they're just kind of talking among themselves when you listen to this. They are not addressing an audience at all. They were talking about taxes on, they used a singular word, on corporation, but I assume this would refer to all corporations. And they were speaking, as your visitor did, about the various, I don't know what they're called, the variations in how taxes, the percentages and all of that. And what I could gather from the comments was they did decide, finally, the phrase they used, all right, if it is at this amount, that's fine. That tax corporations will pay. If there is an overage that they have paid, but it's not required that they pay it by some magic or other, we'll give it back to the corporation. That was the phrase that they used 3 and 4 times, and boy, did I hear that. We will give it back to the corporation. That, to me, indicates that if these corporations pay a legal amount in taxes, the legislature has the ability to say, oh, no, no, that's too much, and give some back to the corporations. How in the hell does that work?
You know, I have not heard that, Elizabeth. I don't doubt you, but I have not heard of that.
That's
and I'm going to have to
exactly
go.
I
believe you. I'm going to have to look that up. But
yeah, that's weird. And yeah. Then as they are busily engaged in finishing up this meeting and congratulating themselves on what they have done, someone kind of in the back row said, oh, yeah, we didn't give our state workers a raise. Oh, yes, we'll do that next year.
All right. Elizabeth, thanks a lot. I think you're right. Most state workers did not get a raise this year, although some did. Some,
I think they just realized it at the tag end. Well, you know, next year.
Okay. All right, Elizabeth, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. I think that, you know, I had hoped to have a guest on right now, a school board member, but maybe we'll do it some other day. She wasn't able to make it. But the Florida school superintendents are calling on Governor Scott to bring back lawmakers for a special session to give more money through this to the state's K-12 system. It turns out that they had this legislative session, and what they decided was to give a 47-cent increase per student to education this year, this coming year. 47-cent increase. Now, we know that there's inflation out there. Costs go up every year. Inflation isn't very high. You know, it's 1 or 2%, but 47 cents per student increase does not keep up with inflation. So what this is a setback for schools, and I think that's why school superintendents are so concerned about this and want the legislature to go back in session. So we'll see what happens with that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And let's go to Rick in Largo. Hi, Rick. You're on WMNF. What's on your mind?
Hi. You mentioned Toys R Us filing, you know, Chapter 11.
Right.
Also, today, iHeartMedia is also filing for bankrupt.
Yeah, I heard that on NPR, yeah.
Yeah, and both of them are due to leverage buyouts. Wasn't that the whole premise of the movie Wall Street?
The first Wall Street was all about that. Yeah. The second. I didn't see the second Wall Street.
I didn't either. And in both cases, guess who is responsible? Bain Capital. And they've settled, Toys R Us? They've got like $5 billion in debt, paying $400 million a year in interest. And the reason, this caught my attention is who was in charge of Bain Capital or worked for? Wasn't that Mitt Romney?
It was.
Yeah, and here he is back in the political arena again. I think people should keep in mind, leverage buyouts should be illegal. Don't they most always wind up crushing a company through debt?
Yeah, they end up really looting the company, taking its best assets, selling them off, and leaving the remainder, the shell of the company, with huge debt. And it's a crazy system, and I'm not sure that the regulators or Congress are looking at it closely enough, because it destroys people's lives. When a company shuts down, if you're working at the Sports Authority, and suddenly the Sports Authority closed down as it did a year or two ago, if you're working at Toys R Us, that's your job. You're the manager at Toys R Us. Yeah, it's ruining your lives. You know, there's a really interesting article, Rick, I think you're going to find illuminating, and that is last year Bloomberg reported on the coming crash of retail, not just because of Amazon, but because all the retail stores, especially at the malls, are over-leveraged. And they say that the debt is coming due from 2019 to 2025. So the biggest retail crashes are still ahead. I mean, we've seen Walmart lay off 10,000 people this year. We've seen Sam's Clubs, some of them, close. Kmart is essentially closed. I mean, the retail has taken a big hit, and it's going to get worse, according to this Bloomberg article. Now, you know, we can't always see into the future, and it could be alarmist. But one of the things they pointed out in the Bloomberg article was that Nordstrom's, which is a really well-run company, and they've got stores in Seattle, and they've got a couple of stores here in Tampa, and they're all over the country. Nordstrom's wanted to take its company private because they thought, well, we don't want to answer to shareholders anymore. We want to buy back all of our stock. So they went to the bankers, and the bankers said, yeah, we'll lend you the money to buy back the stock, but we're going to lend it to you at 13%. And the Nordstrom family said, no way, we're going to pay 13% interest on loans to buy back the stock. So they didn't buy back the stock. But that is how bankers and lenders view retail right now. They don't view it as a good bet, a good buy. And so they want to extract as much money as they can before retail goes crashing down. Now, let's hope it doesn't happen. Let's hope that Bloomberg article is wrong. But look it up. It's all about the coming retail crash. And Bloomberg wrote it last year. I'll send you a copy, too. You can always email me at rob@wmnf.org, and I can send you a copy of the article. But it's frightening.
Yeah, I mean, when one of the biggest companies, Walmart, is having trouble, that's just going to cascade.
Yeah. All right, Rick, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Frank in Sarasota. Is this the same Frank? I hope not.
No, it is not.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
As I was calling up, I was hearing Frank in Sarasota.
Yeah, all right. Two Franks from Sarasota in one day.
Yeah, right. He won't let me on. Anyway, I just want to tell you my wife's experience with the middle-class tax cut.
Yeah.
She's still working. I'm not. I'm retired. But she got $15 a week, $30 every paycheck, $60 a month. So that's her, that's her tax break.
And was she happy with that? I mean, you know.
No, she's not complaining, but, you know, she's not really happy. I mean, it amounts to $720 a year. It's not, I won't even make one in a mortgage payment or much else.
Yeah, it doesn't do much.
Look forward to that $30 every 2 weeks so we can have a pizza, you know.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, Frank, thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Here's somebody in the 239 area code who writes, I work in construction as a field manager, and I make $1,000 a week. The new tax scheme has me pocketing a whopping $2 a day. Of course, I'll hate to see how much my taxes go up in 3 years, writes Charles. All right, Charles is making $2 more a week because of the tax breaks. I guess I was reading where the Koch brothers are making $27 million a week in the tax breaks. That was according to the article that we were talking about at the top of the show, the article written by Bob Lord. And let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Norton in Clearwater. Hey, Norton, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Rob. I appreciate it. I just wanted to remind everybody that the legislature is putting an amendment on November's ballot that's going to restrict tax increases unless more than 60% or two-thirds of the legislature vote in favor of a tax thing. And all that's going to do is hand-tie the Democrats if they take control or any other people so that all these tax breaks that were given away now or short funding schools, we're not going to be able to increase taxes to pay for that. So just to, you know, remind the voters to vote no against this amendment.
Yeah, it's going to be a big battle this November. Norton, thanks a lot. Thanks for reminding us.
Okay.
All right. Absolutely right. Let's go to Cecilia, who's in Tampa. Hi, Cecilia. You're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to tell you, you had a guest on talking about the bonuses that were given to employees.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm so glad that you asked the question if everybody was going to get $1,000. And no, they are not going to get $1,000. It's based on your longevity with a company. And I think, as most people know, people don't stay on jobs 20, 30 years anymore. They move from job to job. So if the bonuses are commensurate with how long you've been on the job, chances are you've got a handful of people that probably got a $1,000 bonus. And then for those part-time employees, it's prorated. So, you know, they're not going to get $1,000 either, but they keep promoting the $1,000 as though everybody was getting $1,000, and it's not the case. I'm not sure what if it was the New York Times or what article I read, but it did say that Walmart was given bonuses based on longevity, Home Depot, Lowe's. It's a whole bunch of companies out there that are not given $1,000, but that's what they're using to promote this tax cut.
To market it. Yeah, yeah. And Cecilia, you're exactly right. It was the New York Times that reported that. You're exactly right. Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say, too, is that the $1,000 for those people that actually get it, it's not $1,000 because that's taxed. And on top of that, you have to pay FICA.
Yeah, you do.
That's 0.65%. So for those people who may be lucky enough to actually get $1,000, it winds up being probably about $750. And for those people who get less, obviously, you know, they're not getting a whole lot either. So they promote this. And the best thing for the American workers would have been forget the bonuses and increase their hourly wage.
That would have been so good, yeah.
Right, exactly. That's something they can sink their teeth in, and that's something that they would be able to see over the long haul. But the taxes are just a one-time thing. And these companies, what they've done, I don't know if you remember this meeting when Cohen had the meeting with the CEOs and asked them to raise their hands, everybody that was going to use that money to invest back. And they had a handful of people raise their hands, and he said, well, why aren't the other hands going up? That's because they were going to use it for buyback.
Yeah, that's right. Cecilia, you're exactly right. Spot on. And thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
All right. I wish we had more time. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Mitch Perry and the Midpoint Program. This is WMNF in Tampa.
Maybe you have lost your mind. Maybe all the